You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To The Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
At home and welcome. This is another episode of To The Journey.
To the journey!
My name is Charlene Schmidt, and with me is my fantastic, intelligent, and still handsome co-host.
Wait, still handsome? What do you mean? Like,
You've always been, bud.
When I hit 30, like soon, is it just going to go down? Or?
Well, I'm 33, and so it hasn't all gone downhill just yet. That said, I have been looking forward all week to this topic, and I've been thinking about it constantly because we're talking about Voyager as it related to us, or as it has related to us in our lives, kind of like the soundtrack to your life, all these moments that have special meaning for us, memories entwined with Voyager. I mean, this is going to be fantastic. I have so many things we could talk about. This podcast could go on for hours. I would just love to forewarn everybody now. It won't, but we sure could.
When you and I have been talking throughout the week about this idea, and we've been calling it the soundtrack to our life behind the scenes and on the other side of the room, and we're not talking about the music that really connects to us. It's like when you look at a soundtrack, when you listen to a soundtrack and you go through it and you're like, oh yeah, that's the song that was playing when they were in the diner in that scene, or that's the song that was playing, you know, when they were having that epic fist fight, you know, in the movie. That's the
right kind
of thing. And so we're going to do that with moments and episodes and little connections and relationships and maybe even one-liners, and we're going to go through those and talk about what that makes us remember about our own lives.
Absolutely. So let's put this in context. It's the mid to late 1990s, early 2000s. Voyager started when I was in the eighth grade, and I was 13. So how about you?
Yeah, I was just starting middle school or like just finishing elementary school. So like you and I were pretty much in that same realm.
Yeah, pretty close, because I was just working my way through what we called it junior high, not middle school at the time. And then as Voyager went on, of course, high school.
Right.
So let's skip a couple of years to 96, and it's early 1996, and I'm 14, and Threshold airs. And we all know about Threshold and how it's crazy, and some people think it's downright stupid. I think it's fun and goofy, and I feel like it's an anything goes thing. That suited my life so incredibly much at 14, because when you're 14, the hormones are raging, and I was at that point in my life where I was trying to define myself.
Mm.
I wanted to figure out who the heck this person was. And it was a very like seminal moment. And when I watched Threshold and it was just this extravaganza of anything goes, I thought, you know what? Anything goes for me too. And I liked that. I have a little bit of a mischievous side that doesn't want to play things straight. I want to mix it up and be goofy and just enjoy stuff, and that's what I feel like Threshold was. I totally embraced that at 14 from that moment forward and experimented trying to figure out who I was. It actually meant a lot to my life. So I have Threshold of all things to thank for that, because it was that silly. It made me silly.
See, that's all. And you could even see it, like, you could even see it as some sort of analogous, you know, puberty thing where he's like, you know, he's going through all these changes and he doesn't know what he's going to become. Then he's ripping out his own tongue. Oh, wait. Maybe that was just my puberty experience there.
No, I think it was everybody's puberty experience. We all turned into lizards at some point.
Yeah. And then you're like, okay, now I can reproduce and have lizard babies. This is what's going on in my life right now.
All right. That is actually one of the big things that influenced my thought of generating this topic. I want to know what's a big one for you.
Well, a big one for me, I did talk about this a couple weeks ago, And I'll just recap it real quick, because when you brought this topic up to me, this is immediately what I thought of. I was like, oh, we kind of teased that a couple of weeks ago. And that's when we were talking about Tsunkatsu.
Uh-huh.
For Tsunkatsu for me, and Tsunkatsu is not my favorite episode. I don't know. I like the episode. It's not like it connects with me on a spiritual level or anything like that. It's a fun episode, but this aired in February of 2000. And for some reason, my mind associates me really kicking off Star Trek Voyager with Tsunkatsu. Now, I know that season six, that's like in the middle of season six, it's much later. And I loved Voyager, and I watched it from Caretaker on, and I was obsessed with Star Trek from the moment I was born all the way on. But for some reason, with Tsunkatsu, that's when I just really started just getting into things on the side, you know, like reading books and talking with other people, finding an online community, and the UPN ad campaign that was going on during that time with, you know, like with the WWE and The Rock and everything like that, and co-branding and everything. Yeah, the cross promotion. Like, they were doing it so heavy that I don't even necessarily, I might have been getting into this stuff on the side way before Tsunkatsu, but for some reason, in my mind, that's how I associate it, because there was so much ad campaign for it. And it's kind of like with like Great Expectations, at least the movie, where the lead character says, I'm not going to tell you how things actually happen, I'm going to tell you how I remember it. That's pretty much how it goes for me in this situation.
That's right. Reality is entirely what we conceive it to be, right? Whether that's actual or not. Yeah, I remember you saying this a couple of weeks ago, and so this is when everything really clicked for you.
Yeah, this is when I was just, like, you know, for a long time, I was the kid who was obsessed with Star Trek. Like, whenever there was a comment made in class, or, like, people would turn and look to me like, oh yeah, he likes sci-fi, he likes Star Trek. Ever since I was born, I was that kid. I was the nerdy kid who liked Star Trek.
Oh, me too.
I feel like with Tsunkatsu on, I made it a part of my identity.
That's interesting. I'm trying to think now of when that actually happened for me, because I was not a very good closeted Trekker before. There was a time, people, when being a nerd and being a Star Trek fan was not a popular thing. You would get made fun of for it.
Yes, yes.
And this was, of course, in my growing up years. But you know what? I reached a point, and I'm not entirely sure when I just stopped caring. I thought, this is a part of me. Deal with it.
Yeah.
It might have been seventh grade when Generations came out, and I found out that a girl who had a locker a couple down from me, she also was a Star Trek fan, and she was a pretty popular girl. I mean, she had, you know, a lot of friends, blah, 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 that whole thing. And so it was cool then to be a Star Trek fan. If she was going to be a Star Trek fan, well, then what's the big deal? She actually defended me one day, and I just thought, yeah, kind of like what Data does in Generations. Yes. Exactly. We were talking about that movie so much. We were talking about our favorite parts, and when Data says, oh shit, and I hate this, and we were just quoting everything. It was a great time in my life.
Yeah, however you feel about Generations, it is a very quotable Star Trek film.
Not just
Data. I mean, there's just so many other cool things that are going around there.
Oh, absolutely.
And yeah, I think that's, I mean, maybe that's what Tsunkatsu is for me. Like, it's like, it was 2000, I was 14, high school just started, and you know, I was just like, you know what, screw it. I've always been a Star Trek fan, but this is like, I am not holding back whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when Generations came out, I was so obsessed with getting it on videotape that I would run in. And, like, this was, before everything was released online and before you could check everything online, where I'd run into the video store. If we were even driving by it, I'd say, Dad, pull over. And I'd run into some video store and say, is Generations here yet? And they go, no, stop asking. And I'm like, okay. And I run back away.
Oh, God, I did this too.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, man. You know what I did with First Contact? Because this was a time, we got to put this into context, too. Things did not come out on video cassette the way that DVDs come out almost right after they're done in the theater, mm-hmm. the way they do now. You had to wait sometimes up to a year.
You had to wait
to get
forever.
Things on video. Yeah. So what I did is I paid my parents, I think, probably $5 so that when it came out in the summer of 97 on pay-per-view, I video recorded that and listened to it all summer.
You pirate.
I know. If I ever go to jail, that's why.
That's why, because you recorded First Contact years ago
when it was on pay-per-view. Heaven forbid my crimes.
I think I did that with Matrix. I did that with the Matrix on pay-per-view.
Mm. I had to have that movie. I just had to have it. And I remember something very specific. For whatever reason, my videotape collection, I had like half of something on one videotape, but then I only had one other videotape. I had to split First Contact into two.
Awesome.
So I have the first half at the end of that first tape, and then on the second one. And so I'm missing just a teeny
You're
bit.
You're missing like 30 seconds later.
Yes, yes. I watched it that way so much. So when I actually got the actual copy, it was like, oh yeah, that happened.
See, okay, what's so funny is that in people who've been listening to us for a long time or people who have just started listening to us, our first episode is called Worn Out VHS because as Star Trek fans of a particular age, like if you're 25 or above, mm-hmm. I'd say you have distinct memories of juggling VHS tapes and trying to tape as many episodes as you could because they didn't exist on DVD. They didn't release them on VHS for a very long time. And if they did, they were super expensive and very hard to find. Like, unless you were in a major city, you could not find them because they were such a specialty item.
Absolutely. I remember looking for them, and I could never find them, at least in a complete state. And they were expensive. They were something like $15 for two episodes.
Yeah, it was absurd. Like, I think might have been even more than that. Like, it would have been closer to 20 for two episodes. Mm. And it was just, just wasn't worth it. But, like, for a Star Trek fan, you always, you ride the line with your checkbook every single time. And
they know we'll eventually shell out the money. But the thing was, is I was a teenager and I didn't have money, so.
Right, yeah.
It was better to get a 5-pack of blank VHS tapes and just record it.
I would get those for, like, Christmas and my birthday, I would get blank VHS tapes, like massive amounts
of
them.
Me too. Yep. My mom, I think, knew that kept me going. That kind of kept me from wanting bigger and more expensive things. And so she shelled out the money for that and Star Trek books and the internet. And I was happy.
All right. Well, let's get back on track. Let's get back on the Voyager here. So what's your second one? What's your second moment that helps define your soundtrack?
Okay. This is a fun one, I think. Macrocosm. You
know, yeah.
Badass Janeway. We love the biceps. I remember this being a time in my life where I was probably in the best athletic shape of my life at 15. And I remember Janeway's bulging biceps, as well as Picard's in First Contact, just how fit Patrick Stewart is. And I'm thinking, you know what? I want to work on my arms. And I always had trouble. I was always that wimpy kid who could never do pull-ups. And I thought, you know what? Before the school year is out, I am going to do a pull-up. And so I actually really worked on trying to get fit. And especially with my arms, I got a little bit of definition for the first time in my life. I was 15. And I was doing it all just in gym class, you know, because I had to. But by the end of that year, I remember in May, suddenly it clicked and I was able to do push-ups. I went from being able to not even do one to doing five. And I felt so accomplished.
All because of Janeway's arms.
And Captain Picard's. But those two things, like, if those guys can do it, why can't I? I need to work harder.
Yeah, those Starfleet tank tops, those are inspirational.
And now, granted, I hated tank tops, and I still do, and I have weak piece of crap arms yet again still. I mean, the following summer, all I did was sit at my computer and write fanfic and chat with Trek fans. So, of course, I lost the definition, but for that small, singular moment, I was a badass.
See, that's what really sucks, is that I'm totally with you on this one, because, like, I was in the best shape of my life at, like, 14 and 15 and 16 and everything like that. Yeah, sure, I used to look how the captains did when on TV, but now I'm starting to look closer to how they look now.
You and me both, buddy, you and me both. And there's nothing to be ashamed of that, and yet, you know, boy, I really should probably work just a little bit harder than I do.
Same here. As I just ordered a pizza right before we started this podcast.
You know, it's hard when we have the life of desk jockeys, both of us. And it's very hard to stay fit, whereas I think if we were on the Enterprise and we had the gym and physical things, like we had to jump over things on the bridge, we would be probably in much better condition, but
you know what? We need to create a Star Trek workout where you sit up and down in your chair like Kirk. You jump over the console on the Enterprise D like Worf and Picard, and you just do that repeatedly.
Oh my God, Tristan, do you know how brilliant of an idea this is?
All right, everybody on the internet who just heard that, you don't get to do this. We get to do this.
We're going to make it up, and then we're going to market it to you and become millionaires.
The Riker lunges. That's what you need to do. The Riker lunges. That's one of them.
Yes. See, this is so brilliant. Okay, yeah. I want to make a website for this. I seriously do. We're going to work on this.
I'm dead serious. The Janeway pull-ups, that's what we're
gonna
do.
We're gonna do workout videos based on Star Trek. Oh my God, this is great, because even nerds can be fit.
Even nerds can be fit.
That'll be our slogan. Oh my God!
Okay,
This is great. Okay, so what's another one for you?
Well, another one for me, like, this isn't particularly a moment in the show, or an episode, or a line, but what this is, and this is something that we've talked about a lot on the show, and we're gonna talk about it a lot again, and that's Pathways in Mosaic.
Naturally. Available on Audible.
Available on audible.com. Okay, so with these two novels, for those of you who don't know, if you're new listeners, Pathways and Mosaic are novels written by Jerry Taylor. Pathways is the story and history of the Voyager crew sans Janeway. Mm-hmm. And Mosaic is the story of just Janeway. Because she's the captain, she gets her own novel.
That's right.
I didn't buy a lot of Star Trek novels growing up. I just didn't. I didn't read that much. I don't know why. Like, it was just, for some reason, I just wasn't into it that much as a kid.
Okay.
And I would read a let me phrase it. I would read novelization of a show more than like reading an original novel. And I don't know why.
Yeah, I remember they would occasionally, especially for two-parters, do a novelization. Like for DS9's The Search, I remember getting that right when it came out. They would do that.
And a lot of pilot episodes, like the like Emissary and Caretaker. I read those, you know, and also I had the novelization of All Good Things, you know. I would read those novels, but I didn't really read that many original novels until I got Pathways in Mosaic, and I just read them over and over and over again. And this was when, I can't remember exactly when I read them, but I think I was in middle school, and I just, you know, there wasn't a lot of kids in my neighborhood. I was pretty much the only kid in my neighborhood. I didn't have a lot of friends within walking distance or bike distance.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of just, you know, played by myself, or like when I was old and like when I was too old to play with action figures, quote unquote.
Oh, now, how are you ever too old to play with action figures?
I still have action figures on my desk, so I guess I never grew out of it. But what happened was I'd come home from school because I hated my school. I absolutely hated my school. I had a horrible public school experience.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, filled with a lot of crap, a lot of violence. So I would come home, and I'd get Pathways or Mosaic, and I'd either read it and or listen to the audiobook that I had on tape of both ones. And Pathways was read by Picardo, Mosaic was read by Mulgrew, and I was just immersed in this world. And so I'd get home, I'd get a Pepsi, I'd get a miniature Baby Ruth, and I would eat and drink that while I read these books, and I did that over and over and over again. And it just, I almost have these memorized, and those hold a very special place in my heart. And it's one reason that Voyager holds a special place in my heart, because that was my escape. When I had a horrible day at school, which was almost every day, I'd come home and everything would be okay because I had my parents, I had a great home life, and I had Voyager, specifically Pathways and Mosaic.
Oh my goodness, I relate to this so much, and I can't believe that I never knew this quite in as much detail as you just told me now. Wow, yes, high school was an awful experience for me. I had a really good junior high experience, and then when I went to high school, man, it just felt like everything fell apart, and the only thing that I really clung to at that particular point in my life was Star Trek, and especially Voyager, because it was airing at the time, and Janeway, whether I realized it or not, was a role model. That was my happy place. That was safe. That was good. All was well with the world as long as I had a tape of Star Trek.
you have a tape of Star Trek. You have an episode that you found off TV. You you have a record maybe from the 70s where, you know, from like that's a story, a dramatic audio play, or you have some fan fiction that you found from some of your friends, like you passed around stories and things like that.
Oh goodness, the fan fiction. When I discovered that in 1995, let's just jump into my next one.
Oh yeah, let's do it.
That was, oh man, that was something else. Actually, I think it was 1996 when I really, really got into it. And I specifically remember for some reason, the Cranberries had a new album out that year. And I had bought it for my birthday. And I remember reading fan fiction and listening to that album just over and over and over till like 3 a.m. And this was way before, like, you know, Janeway and Chakotay were... I don't know, there was always a speculation, but they weren't really acting on it that much at this point. There was resolution, as I think that was it. But people were going nuts, and I remember the AOL chat forums, the message boards that they had there, because at the time that was the hot thing to do. Mm-hmm. And the things that people created, it was just ingenious. So even though this is not, like, episode-specific, it is still Voyager-specific, that whole summer was bliss because of that.
Yeah.
I was reading fan fiction, writing fan fiction, talking with other fans because I didn't know any fans really locally that I could talk to. So this was my community. This was safe haven again.
Yeah. I think you're going to hear that word a lot throughout the show. I mean, our show, To the Journey, is community. And that's what you find with Star Trek. And that's why we do what we do. And that's why we love it when you guys write us, find us on Twitter. And that's why we're all friends on Trek.fm, is because we have this sense of community, and that's what it brings. It's not just about a show, it's about each other.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, if it were just about the show, I don't think we would be going this strong, doing this much, having this much fun at it. It really is a community. It really is. And we would love to hear people talk about their point of view on this, because we are hardly the only ones who, I'm sure, have all these weird associations with their lives. I'm sure every other fan out there has them. So let's get on the forum and talk about it. Trek.fm/forums. I'd love to know your stories since we're sharing ours.
Or you can message us directly by going to trek.fm/contact.
Yes, that'll email us.
All right. Well, with me, for my next one, this is a combined two episode where it's Message in a Bottle and Hope and Fear.
Ooh, okay.
Now, those are two of some of my favorite episodes. I love those two episodes. Mm-hmm. Message in a Bottle is really funny, and Hope and Fear, I think, is just a well-crafted episode.
Sure.
But the thing that I take away from these is ship design.
Okay, sure.
Message
yeah,
in a Bottle
sense.
Had the Prometheus that had the three-level separation, which did a one-up on the Galaxy class.
Yep.
And Hope and Fear had the Dauntless, which wasn't specifically a Federation ship because it was in disguise. But this got me into ship design. This now, obviously, I'm not an engineer or anything like that, so it's not real ship design. But like after I saw these episodes and I saw how different these ship designs were, and this is after First Contact, but it kind of started with First Contact for me, but this really cemented it in Voyager, because when you just remember in First Contact when you're in the theater and you see all those new ship designs.
Yeah.
You don't see a ship that was the same except for the Defiant. And you see the Sovereign class, the Akira class, the Nova class, Thunderchild, Steamrunner. It's all of them were just like, I was just mind blowing that we're getting all these new ship designs at once. Like, I almost couldn't handle it. Like, I was shaking in my seat because it was so amazing.
So many new toys.
And then when I saw the Prometheus and the Dauntless in Voyager, I was like, you know what? I'm going to start drawing my own stuff. And so I did, and for years, that's all that I did in class when I should have been paying attention. I was drawing my own ships. And I know that there is millions of fans out there, Star Trek fans out there, who have the same type of fascination that I did and still do, because they're doing Ship of the Line is doing a contest right now.
Absolutely, yes.
And Star Trek Online had the contest with the Enterprise F. I submitted something to that.
Did you? Oh, nice.
I submitted an old design. I found it from high school, and I was like, this one's still pretty good, so I just submitted that one.
Fantastic.
And so it's just so much fun, and I remember like adults who didn't understand found it. And found some of these drawings, and they're like, really, this is what you do? I was like, yeah, this is what I do. This would actually work in real life if warp theory was real, just so you know. The specs are completely accurate.
that had to have been an adorable nerd child moment. Seriously, I can see younger Tristan saying that. For
yeah,
sure.
It was pretty much the yeah. Just so you know, I've done my research. Okay, my fictional research.
Yeah, you know what? At 14 and 15, I felt like I had my life way more together than I do now. So I knew my stuff too.
Exactly. So yeah, those episodes, that kind of stuff. You know, greatly influenced a hobby of mine that I kept for a long time.
That's so cool. That's awesome. And yeah, you are by far not the only one. I see people making ships or aliens or whatever sparks their interest all the time on Twitter, people sharing their stuff. And then also, shout out to Daniel Prue, our ship guy. The yeah. more ample the nacelles, the better. All right. So I think the next one for me actually goes a little bit into more of the beginning, season one of Voyager, this new cast, this new show, all of the possibilities long before we started to discover, oh, they're really not going to fulfill this thing's potential, really inspired me to do my own writing.
Oh.
And so while you were drawing ships, I was writing scripts. And now granted, I was doing this a little bit beforehand because one of my favorite hobbies, starting at about the age of 12, is my friends and I, especially during lunch or whatnot, we would, like, you know, start a story and then write it, take turns, swapping it back and forth, line by line. What we would write one line, pass it on to the next person, and then keep going back and forth. And, you know, of course, they were probably horrible, but we had a really good time doing it. But by 1994 and 95, I was taking this a little more seriously in writing, quote unquote, real scripts. I was learning the format of actual script structure and how you would go about doing that and writing, quote unquote, real stories that honestly I thought, you know what, maybe someday I'll submit this to Lolita Facho, who was the script coordinator. And at the time, you could send in scripts to Star Trek. You know, you just never know. You might be the one in a million who actually gets that chance, because some people really did, like Lisa Klink. That's how she became a writer on the show. And so I thought, that's what I wanted to do with my life.
If I knew that, I totally would have done that. I totally would have submitted a script.
Oh, I did. And that's exactly what I wanted to do with my life. This is how naive I was, Tristan, okay? I can't believe I'm sharing this, but here goes. At 14, I was going to be a screenwriter. And then as soon as I graduated high school, I was going to hitchhike my way to Los Angeles, break down the door at Paramount, and get my way in and become a writer of Star Trek, because I was just going to be that good.
That, you know what? That's not naive at all, because you need to have the...
Are you serious?
No, you need to have the... Okay, sure, call it naive, call it whatever you want, but you need to have those moments. You need to have that drive. And even though
tell that to my mother.
Even though you didn't go out and do that, even though you're not a writer for Star Trek, it doesn't matter, because you need to have dreams, whether they actually happen or not. Oh. Dreams change. Yes, dreams change. Like, I had very different dreams when I was a kid than what I do now. It doesn't mean that you failed. It doesn't mean that your life took a wrong turn. It just means that you're evolving and you're changing. But those dreams are important. You need that kind of inspiration to go out and do stuff.
Where were you when I was 14? I really needed to hear this, because I took myself way too seriously at this point and told my mom what I wanted to do. And, she, you know, she was very realistically trying to, key me down just a teeny bit, make it a little more down to earth. And I felt like she shot me down. It was like the one thing I feel like my mom did that maybe she shouldn't have done, because you're right. You need those dreams. You need to be as extravagant as possible, because you have to have something to aim high for.
Right.
Especially when you have the drive and energy to work and learn and do in your teenage years, because that is when it happens. And when I got shot down, I felt so deflated. And for a little while, I kept doing it, but eventually I kind of devolved and just thought, well, yeah, this isn't going to work. Are you serious, Char?
No, let's not turn down this path, because you have a great life now. And that's the thing, is that it's just because these things didn't happen doesn't mean that your life is any less valuable. It doesn't mean that you didn't achieve something, because I wanted to be a Jedi when I was 5. You know, like, because that didn't happen, does that mean that I failed in my life? No, these dreams are fun. These dreams are great, because you have them when you're a kid, you have them when you're in high school, and then you grow up and you're like, could I do that? Sure. Should I? Yeah. No, I'll do something else. And it's funny that you bring that up, because I forgot about this until this moment, but Voyager kind of inspired my path a little bit, because when I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do, I was like, okay, you know, should I go into politics because I'm, you know, full of hot air, or should I go?
Well, you would have qualified then.
Yeah. You know, like, should I be a lawyer because I love the sound of my own voice? You know, do I want to do this? And I realized that everything was influenced by movies, specifically TV and like X-Files and Star Trek and things like that. And everything mm-hmm. was around movies and TV. And so I was like, why don't I just go into that? And then I started thinking, I was like, well, you know, do I want to be an actor? Do I want to be a director? Do I want to be an editor? And then I started realizing, I was like, you know what? I'm really getting into ship design, as mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. Maybe I could learn about computer animation. This is up and coming. This might be a big industry someday. And I was like, you know, Voyager's doing this more and more. They switch from models to CG. Maybe I should learn how to do that. But yeah. Then I realized I suck at math. And so... But then I kept on. Then I was just like, okay, instead of doing that, what else should I do? And so I went into school for film production, and I'm currently in video production. Like, I went to LA, I worked, and I hated it. And then I came back, and now I'm doing video production in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And you track our dreams, you track our path, and just the littlest things influence. And Voyager's switch from models to CGI helped me on the path that I'm currently on. Now, I'm not kicking down the doors. I'm not at Paramount right now. I'm not working for CBS or Viacom doing CGI design, but it doesn't mean that these things didn't influence us to where we are now.
Oh, that's so cool. How connecting the dots. How
yeah.
You kind of got to be where you are. I guess a similar thing happened in a much more roundabout way, but I do work in a job where I am being creative, and I have to be at least cognizant of writing. I might not be doing the actual writing, but I need to worry about wording and how it fits with an overall design and things of that nature, because that's essentially what I do, is I design. Mm-hmm. I work with graphics and a little bit of writing, just a teeny bit, depending on the project. And it all goes hand in hand. So in a roundabout way, I too am writing, sort of. It's just kind of another creative outlet.
Yeah. Yeah, we're both in creative outlets, and I think we can trace that definitely back to Star Trek. And
yeah.
I like going into my last one, the last one that I have on my list, that like you it's definitely a good segue for this, because it's two things combined into one. What happened was, when Seven of Nine came onto the screen, she exploded. Like, everybody was obsessed with Seven of Nine. It really did breed new life into the show, even though sometimes it went into the wrong direction or people were obsessed for the wrong reasons. It definitely achieved breathing new life into the show, and a new sense of fandom and a new demographic. And so, because she was so popular, I remember that they released a book, which was the Best of Seven of Nine Scripts. Do you remember this book at all?
No, as a matter of fact, I don't. Tell me about it.
It was called Becoming Human, the Seven of Nine Saga. That's what it was called.
Okay.
And they released this in conjunction with Q scripts, like the Best of Q, in script form.
Oh,
so
wow.
It was, I cannot remember exactly what episode. I think it was Scorpion, Raven, Omega Directive. I know Hope and Fear was in there. I think maybe one.
Okay, season four then.
Yeah, like it was all of those episodes in their script format, where how the actors get them and how the actors read them and the crew and everything like that. And I just immediately snatched it up, and I read it cover to cover over and over again, even though I've seen these episodes and I had these episodes memorized. It was fascinating to see how it was written, because I'd never seen that before. Like, I, even though I was very much into film and very much into TV production and things like that, I didn't really have a professional script on hand. Like, I've seen a few online, but not too many. And this was the first time I had it in my hand. And so I was like, oh, so this is how you format it. This is how you write it. This is how you go down. And mm-hmm. and so, like, fade in, exterior, space, you know, and,
right,
you know,
right.
fade out, end of teaser, you know, like things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that got me inspired, and now I had the tools to do what I wanted to do and write my own scripts and do my own TV scripts and film scripts that I actually produced when I was a kid in high school, because I was like, okay, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to learn this now. And
right.
so I did this, and it was all because I got a hold of Seven of Nine scripts.
Oh, that's amazing. So you kind of did the same thing I did just a couple years later. I could have used this book.
Yeah, exactly. That's what got me thinking about that, because that helped, like, because of that, that got me into, like, I started writing, you know, Star Trek scripts, but then that branched out into original scripts. And this just got me thinking, there, Barge of the Dead, which is a great episode, it's a great B'Elanna episode. Mm-hmm. I think I might have mentioned this before, but this was just another way how it influenced me. Because I was writing so much of Star Trek and of my original stuff, and because I hated my public school experience, when I went to college, I loved it. I loved college, had a great, this, and I started getting into theater, started writing theater plays. And I was in a theater class where you had to write your own stuff and also perform it. And so I took that scene from Barge of the Dead at the end when she's in the circle surrounded by people she loves and she has the bat'leth and she starts, like, what am I supposed to be? You know, am I supposed to be a good Starfleet officer, a good daughter, a good lover, you know, everything like that. And I use that as inspiration for the climax of my scene. And it was totally influenced by Star Trek and everything, all of my writing leading up to that, like my career path and all of my writing and everything was branched off because of Voyager. That's it for me. Like so much of my life and career and hobbies are influenced by Star Trek and specifically Voyager.
Oh my gosh. This makes me think of something I didn't even think about until right now, which was the fact that I did take drama as a sophomore in high school and how much Voyager was influenced, or rather maybe influenced me into doing that. Oh my gosh, yes, this, okay. For one thing, in my drama class, I reenacted Janeway's speech at the end of Caretaker as one of my assignments. I put the bun of steel on and everything. Nice. If I would have had a uniform, I would have, but I think I just dressed in all black. And I pretended like I was on the bridge. I thought it was great. And, but no, actually, the fact that there were so many good actors on Voyager inspired me to want to act. And I got into theater as a result at the start of high school, and it was kind of my salvation for that year. It kept me going. It made me happy. I was really trying at that point in my life to be more outgoing and put myself out there and not be afraid, not be self-conscious, and just not be so introverted.
Because
I was definitely introverted, and I wanted to have a little more of an exterior because I loved the way the actors did their work. I thought it was fascinating. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you really study Bob Picardo and the mastery at which he delivers the Doctor, things like that, or if you see them making appearances on talk shows or whatnot. I mean, I remember watching Kate Mulgrew on the circuits as soon as they were on hiatus and just how she carries herself. I wanted that confidence. And I thought, okay, I'm going to work really hard at this. And drama, I signed up for drama just for that.
Drama is a great place to get self-esteem and to get tools that you'll use for the rest of your life, because I know that I did.
I should have stuck with it, to be quite honest, because it carried me through that year. But then I kind of had a little bit of self-doubt, like, oh, do I really want to do this? And I started to withdraw. And the following year, guess what? Clinical depression.
Everything's connected. Every step we take forward leads us to where we end up. Yeah.
Very much so. Yeah.
Well, I'm happy because I get to stick with it a little bit more because my wife is an amazing actress and a drama teacher.
Oh,
and,
cool.
And yes. So I get to help out whenever I can, and I get to direct youth and these kids in their plays, and it's just so much fun, and it just reminds me of all those times when I reenacted Voyager episodes in my bedroom by myself.
Hey, you know, sometimes I still do that. If I get on a little bit of a roll, if I start off with a quote, I'll just keep going because I know the whole damn thing. It's fun. And that's very cool that you do that. You're inspiring the next generation. Sorry, I had to go there.
Oh, my God, she said it.
Yeah. But you're doing that. You're doing for them the same things that we went through and how we were inspired by that. They're going to come away with the same thing.
Yeah.
That's cool. Well, soundtracks to our lives in Voyager are not the only thing that we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. And so here's a little glimpse at what else has been happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
It doesn't make any sense. I mean, you're dealing with people who are, you know, stupid. I mean, you know, stupid and just so clouded with bigotry and stuff like that, that it's just like, well, what can you say to them?
Earl Grey.
Oh, that's right, because there was like an engineer lady.
Yeah.
I think Geordi.
She's basically
maybe?
Ariel, and she wants more. She wants to see where the
Wait,
people
does she
are.
Have thingamabobs?
The orb.
I think that's the thing that Casey does is he's able to take what the writers gave us and portray a man who is going to do a 180, and you're going to believe it.
The Ready Room.
In watching it again today, preparing for this, I was appreciative of the fact that Wesley was there going, gee whiz.
To the journey! I did like that we got to see some genes in Enterprise.
But that makes sense. I mean, it's kind of bridging the gap between 24th century and now. I don't want to see Captain Janeway in jeans.
Because you know they'd be mom jeans, right? Commentary, Trek Stars.
I think that the term talk soup for geeks is actually very descriptive, which I still find very strange, because I still don't know how that possibly is an example that makes sense.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who watch, as they call it now, the soup.
I don't approve of that. That's disgusting.
Okay.
Literary Treks.
Each character had to go on a mission alone with Spock in a small craft, and that led them all to decide to leave the Enterprise.
I am not working with that guy alone ever again.
And introducing our newest show, Star Trek Axanar, the official podcast.
I've been having a great time experimenting with what works, what doesn't work. You know, what does a Klingon D6 sound like? No one really knows. We don't know what an impulse manifold or a fusion reactor on a D6 sounds like.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. I believe we are up to 17 now. That's a lot of
Trek. I lost
track. Yeah, I think I have too, to be quite honest. I'm a little bit behind on my podcast listening right now. I was out of town for a while, didn't listen to any podcasts, and suddenly I'm massively behind. Holy wow. But you know what? I can access them on basically any platform. I just have to make the time to do it. And I do it with the master feed. They're all in my little phone, and I can listen to them whenever I want. It's nice and convenient. If you haven't done that, check that out. Listen to a lot of Trek FM and get it all that way. Now we have somebody to thank for an iTunes review, and that person is A91R8H8. And this person left us 5 stars and wrote us a short review. We thank them for doing that. And this is a good time to remind everybody of our reviews promotion, which has been extended to August 17th. Or the cutoff for that is midnight Pacific time on August 17th. And so if you have written us a review, this summer?
Yeah.
Roughly. Or if you haven't and want to do it, now is the time, because this makes you eligible to win some prizes. You could win a season of Star Trek DVD or Blu-ray of your choice. You could win some Star Trek novels, some Ships of the Line with the special magazine that comes from Japan, and others. There's, I believe, some Axanar stuff now, too, as well. So it's very cool. So if you've written us a review, or if you're going to, make sure that you review us on iTunes or Stitcher, and then go to trek.fm/review, and let us know who you are, screen name-wise, and which shows you reviewed, and that will give you eligibility to be in that drawing, and then we'll choose winners at random. Here's a little note about our sponsor.
Our sponsor for the show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to, but never thought you had the time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks, with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting To the Journey and Trek.fm.
Well, this was a lot of fun. Like I said at the beginning of this show, I could probably drag this on till dawn, but we've already gone long enough. And we need to focus on what's going to happen next week. What's that going to be?
Next week, a fan sent us a link that gave us a whole list of ideas from season 3 of Voyager that almost happened or were in the process of happening. in the writer's room. They were tossing around some ideas. That list made it online. So, Char, you and I are going to talk about some of our favorite moments from these could-be, would-be episodes from Star Trek Voyager.
So until then, everybody, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!